Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Break the Cycle with me, your host, Joshua Smith. I hope everyone's having a wonderful Thursday. It's Thursday. We didn't do a show Tuesday. I got a lot going on right now, guys, so we will get back to doing two shows a week here, hopefully by next week or the week after. And we'll be doing lots of members-only shows again, too. If you guys are familiar with our members-only show, we let it a little more loose there, but now we are going to start having you guys participate. If you become a member of any of the like financial supporting groups like Patreon or Subscribestar or the YouTube channel memberships, you'll be able to get the link to the StreamYard and pop into our after hour shows and ask questions and hang out with guests and talk and all that good stuff if you're a member. But if you're financially supporting the show, we appreciate you. We'd appreciate you doing that so that you can become a member and hang out in the show. Before we get too far into it, of course, go check out TopLobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get all kinds of great hats, backpacks, hoodies, pillows, leggings. I think he'll even commission like art for you. And you can get all that by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount, or join the Patreon, subscribe, start, become a member of the YouTube channel under all of our videos by hitting the join link, where you can get into a private Discord server and maybe get 30% off up to 2 weeks before his new gear goes to the general public. So great stuff. Great stuff. We got a great show for you guys tonight. I'm very excited. AJ's not here yet. I don't know if he's coming or not.
He's been kind of radio silent as of late. We think the feds got him.
Yeah, the feds may have gotten our good friend AJ.
I mean, I saw him last night.
But. Yeah, but we'll check in with my my co-host, wonderfully haired co-host, Mr. Ryan Kurtz. Sir, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. You're pretty blue again on video.
Yeah, I don't know why it's doing that.
Yeah,
I don't know what
that's
happened.
Weird.
It kind of like the color washed out on mine. I have to figure out why for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was never a problem before, and now it is. So.
Yeah, I'm excited for our performances at the two different conventions here in the Midwest.
Oh yeah, yeah. For you guys that don't know, if you're now I'm not blue anymore. I don't know what's going on there. So yeah, if you're in Kansas or Missouri or Minnesota, myself and Ryan and maybe AJ, I'm not sure.
I'll be at
both the Kansas State Convention, which is in Overland Park, I believe on April 20th. And then we'll also be way up north in Minnesota for the Minnesota State Convention. And all three of us are going to be there doing a live podcast hopefully at both conventions. But, so if you guys are around that area, come hang out with us. That'll be a lot of fun. And you guys can hop on the podcast that way as well. Lots of stuff to talk about tonight. Can we get some, Yep Cox in the chat for our good friend Ryan tonight? If you are new here or an old longtime, viewer, give our good friend Ryan some.
The
Yep
old
Cox.
Heads know me as Ian.
Yeah, it's Ian. This is our show's Ian. Yes, absolutely. Got a great guest for you guys tonight. Look, we're streaming now to Twitter, Twitch, Kick, Odyssey, Rumble, YouTube. Am I missing anything?
I feel like Facebook.
Live to all those platforms now. So if you're watching on any of those platforms, make sure you subscribe. Become a member of the channel, whatever you need to do to get alerts when we go live so you can hang out with us and our great guests. Tonight we got great guests for you guys. I'm very excited. He's been on the show before, and I've been on his show and hung out with him, and he's a great dude. He's the host of Outlawed Thoughts, Mr. Leighton Radner, sir. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Good. It snowed today, so there's that.
But oh, in Alaska. That, it snowed in Alaska, huh? I am shocked. How is that Alaska supremacy going for you, buddy? You were talking about moving out a while back. You still looking into that? What do you got going on?
I've been sticking it out. There's sort of some business stuff I got involved in up here that sort of kept me sort of grounded. And then I also just got some more traction as far as the whole politics thing goes. So I started doing that stuff and covering more of the documentaries that I've been wanting to do. So I've been focusing on that rather than the moving, at least for now.
Well, you know, it's a little warmer in Iowa, not much, but just a little bit.
Yeah. It only snowed twice this last week.
Yeah. No, this last week. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. I went to an interview for a job, and on my way there, it was raining. And I parked in the parking lot and I went in, I was in for about 45 minutes. I walked the facility, talked, did a little test, came back out. My minivan was covered in snow. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? I was like, I thought we were done with the winter. But apparently not.
You're never...
Yeah, everybody here keeps saying that. Because it keeps like, we'll have 3 weeks where it doesn't snow and it all starts to melt finally. And then like what happened yesterday happened and just gets all over us. And you're like...
Yeah, are you, how far from Anchorage? So how far from Anchorage are you? Do you live in the Anchorage area or what?
No, I'm in Seward, so I'm like 130 miles away.
He lives in the sewers like a Ninja Turtle.
Oh, geez, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. makes a lot of sense. I've been to Alaska once, and I will say it is one of the most, if not the most beautiful state. I think Montana and parts of Wyoming definitely have it beat, but there's just so much in Alaska that people don't understand is so gorgeous. And so when I flew into Anchorage. And then we drove for like 3 hours out the Kenai Peninsula to, what's it called? The place where Salty Homer. Dogs is. Homer, yeah.
Homer, yeah.
But actually we went to a small Russian village called Nikolaevsk or some shit that I can't pronounce. And I learned a lot about like the Orthodox Russian like population in Alaska, which if you guys aren't familiar with this is crazy. Like, so like the Orthodox Christians were like, so during the Communist Revolution, Color Revolution, Bolsheviks, like, they couldn't suffer Christianity, right? Like, the two biggest threats to communists and revolutions for communists are faith and family. Because when you have those two things, or even one that's really strong, you don't want to buy into this communist collectivist ideals. You're totally fine with having your own little community of family and faith. And so they actually excommunicated and murdered the Orthodox Russians, who, you know, are the oldest old world part of Russia, right? And so a lot of the Orthodox Christians were forced into China. They got like a 1 year pass to go to China, and the communists in China were like, okay, you got 1 year and then you have to leave here. And then they went to South America. And so like my ex-girlfriend is Orthodox Christian, Russian Orthodox Christian, and her parents met in Brazil. From there, they all migrated to the Pacific Northwest and, of course, Alaska. And so, like, if you go to some of these little Russian villages in Alaska, it's like one street with, like, then they've built all their own homes down the street. And at the end of the street, there's an Orthodox church, their own little community Orthodox church. And, like, the cops don't go into these communities and, like, patrol there. These people still have Russian accents, like my ex-girlfriend and her sisters and brothers that were born here in the United States still have Russian accents, dude. That's like how close knit they are and how much they stated themselves in these Russian villages. There's a ton of them in Oregon, especially Eastern Oregon and Washington too, like Central Washington. And they like the guys get up every morning and they go out and they go around to like neighboring communities and like tell people, hey, you need to fix your driveway. And then like pour concrete for driveways. So they're all like concrete construction workers. And the women stay home and like literally cook all day long, like all day long. I stayed in one of these places and it was like there was food being made. There was never a point from like the morning until like late into the night where there wasn't food of some sort being made. They were like hand rolling sushi and all kinds of stuff, right? And they drink a lot, but they just like stay to themselves. And it was just so bizarre to me to be. It felt like I was in another country because everybody had a Russian accent still. You know what I mean? And like we're like randomly speaking Russian, even though they're born here in the United States. And it was just so bizarre to me to see like that kind of old world, like flair in Alaska. And then of course in Oregon as well, because you just don't expect to see that in places like that. And I looked into it, the population, like the Russian population in Alaska is large. It's like very, very big. It's one of the biggest populations in the state. Pretty crazy. You ever run into the old Ruskies there, Layton?
Yeah, you occasionally run into them. And in Seward here, we actually have a place called the Russian Shop, which is like a place that's like owned by a couple Russian people who moved over here and opened up a store that like caters to like knickknacks and antiques from that era of the like Soviet era. So like if I want to ever get like a communist outfit or something, I have a store like 3 minutes away that I can go get the outfit for.
There you go. Well, it's so funny to me because
potato sack with holes in it.
Well, it's so funny to me because like the Orthodox Russians that live in the United States fucking hate the communists, dude. Like absolutely.
Oh, they don't
hate,
like them. Yeah.
Yeah, hate Soviet Russia, hate the communists.
But they've learned that they can profit off of it. So that's what that's set up down here, is they realize that, because the people that run it are not commies, but they realize that all the young people that are getting off these cruise ships and stuff, they all will buy anything if it has that stupid symbol on it.
Yeah.
And so they've been buying all the old surplus military era stuff and then just reselling it at a huge markup.
Of course.
Kind of a genius business model.
Dumb college kids.
They're running a successful business. Of course they're not communists.
Yeah, no shit, I mean, that's, right?
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious. And it really is. They're selling people whistles and jackets with communist symbolism on it for like three times the marked up value.
That's crazy to me. Jay Forte, thanks for the $5 super chat. He said, "Ew, you're having that Eskimo."
He's one of the good ones.
He's one of my favorite Eskimos. What are you talking about? Look, I'm blue again, dude. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why my color hue has got like that. I'll have to work on the video for the show, or maybe it's just the lighting. Maybe I've turned the lights.
I think it's the camera, because I don't think we've adjusted the lighting really at all.
I don't know.
If it were the lighting, I would look like my camera would look a little different too.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll figure it out. Jay Forte also said, Josh, stop describing paradise. You're describing an Appalachian hog butchering day, usually Thanksgiving. Yes, I would like to say that the only other place where Americans, I know for a fact, Americans are like the Orthodox Russians in these communities is Appalachia. And I've said many, 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 many times that if the shit pops off in the United States, my bug out bag has nine tickets to the Appalachian Mountains. That's where we're going. We're not. That's where I want to be if shit pops off in the United States, because those people there, man, they're already set up like the Vietnamese were in the Vietnam War, dude. I mean, they're ready to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just want to get away from, as far away from anywhere militaristically relevant as I can, and that's where I would go. So. You know, some small town here in Iowa, probably.
Well, there's nukes in Nebraska, dude. So.
Yeah, but they're, you know, if I go to like Wadena, Iowa, I'm not at any risk.
You might be. You could be. They may level.
I know people in Wadena.
They may level the flatland, dude, because there's nukes in Omaha. One of the biggest Air Force bases in the country is in Omaha, or outside of Omaha, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So it's, it's strategically. They put them here on purpose.
Yeah, but,
you know,
just don't go to Omaha.
Yeah, well. Hey,
I basically live on a giant poker chip in relation to military stuff. So
sure.
I don't really think Alaska's a place that's going to necessarily get nuked. It's more of a place you could be worried about, like, ground troops and things. But it's much more of, like, I think every country at this point knows that Alaska is just a giant resource. So it's like, if there was a big military situation breaking off, that would be something everybody would be kind of keeping in their mind. I always comment that with the whole Russia-Ukraine stuff when that was going on. I was like, well, I mean, if everybody really wants the reason why Alaska can't produce oil, that's why.
Right.
Because if Alaska was producing its own oil and collecting its own resources, it would make sense that because we're so close to Russia, some of those resources might be sold to them or might be sold to China. And I think that's the thing that immediately freaks out the U.S. system, because they're like, well, if we do that, then we can't have our wars. So you end up back at square one. I was going to mention with the Russian population, the Orthodox up here, it's always fun if you want the juxtaposition there to talk to some people who have sort of mixed feelings about the Orthodox groups. Go find like a group of old Alaska natives, like not these pussy ones that are around today, but like a group of them from the, like, that were around in the 60s and stuff. And they have some mixed feelings there. It could be very fun conversation.
I bet, man. Rob, thanks for the $2 super chat. He said, whatever happened to Sarah Palin? Yeah, what did happen? Didn't her daughter have teen pregnancy and she just kind of fell off the map after that?
Her daughter had teen pregnancy and her grandson has Down syndrome.
Oh.
But
yeah, they're
is his name Danny, and does he make grilled cheeses at night though?
They had a reality show, I think, for a little while, and I think she just kind of got out of the public spotlight and probably is living a much better life for it.
Oh, yeah. So she fucked up. So this is sort of the part that gets, I think, obfuscated by kind of the Republican ecosystem. So Sarah Palin was liked in Alaska to begin with. I would say a lot of even libertarian types liked her, partially because she was in favor of giving back the PFD and she was in favor of guns and a lot of other things. But then once she got into power, she was completely corrupted, like from the top down, and everybody in the state who saw it, everybody knows it. She actually lived in Wasilla, which is, I lived in Big Lake, which is like, you know, 30 miles away from where she lived. And so I've met her a number of times and met a bunch of people in the family and stuff like that. Just sort of around town, not a very big area there. But they're nice people in general, right? But that just doesn't really mean much when you're talking about politician types. She is very cutthroat, but she's not dumb. Everybody has this view that she's like stupid. She's not. If you go read what she's written and you look at the rest of her work, she's actually smart. She just doesn't. She's like a Midwest type.
She's a
mom
woman
character. Yes, exactly.
He talks like a Minnesotan mom.
She's the archetypal like Karen, basically.
Right.
Before that was like a meme. So when she ran with Sarah with McCain, that was a big blow to her image. But the big blow to her image was the second she left Alaska, she decided to run for office in Arizona back in the 2000s. And everybody in Alaska from that day forward hated her. Whether you were Democrat or Republican, it didn't matter. It destroyed her base in Alaska because Alaskans aren't really big fans of like you going to another state and running for office over there and then coming back here and pretending like you're hunky dory, been here the whole time. It's like, no, you wanted to do that over there, so go do that.
Oh shit.
So that became sort of the attitude with her. And she's, when she was picked for McCain's campaign at that point, it was like, oh, you just fucked yourself. Like, you're done.
Yeah. McCain, anything that McCain touches turned to shit. That's kind of how it works. You know what I mean? I think it's one of those like karmic things. You know what I mean? Like, he's, you know, responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And he just, everything for the rest of his life would be shit. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, I'm not a grave dancer, right? Like, I think the first show you and I ever sat down and talked about was the tweets from the New Hampshire Libertarian Party with the happy holidays tweet,
yeah.
which you know, look, dude, you've cultivated this culture of war in the United States where you know, it's gotta be constantly about empire, and you're responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, and you have a daughter that says you were one of the greatest public servants in the world. She deserves everything she gets, dude. And John McCain got taken out in a seriously ironic way, you know, with a quick brain tumor that took him off the planet Earth very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't say that he didn't deserve it, but I'm not a grave dancer, but I will certainly celebrate the holiday that our world got a little bit safer when John McCain left. No doubt.
My opposition wasn't so much on the grave dancing.
Yeah, but it's you've gotten a lot more extreme.
No, I still hold the same position that you don't mock someone that just lost their father.
Yeah.
That is mourning. That is genuinely mourning.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a terrible thing to do. And almost no one is going to be on your side with that. You're going to look like the bad guy.
Well, there was a lot of
no matter how bad the dude in the grave is.
I think I still hold true to my belief that LPNH has not gone far enough. But go ahead, Layton. What do you got to say? Take your stab.
I was gonna say my only like 2 cents in that regard is like, I get the point of like that is a line that is far, but at the same time, like if I had just had somebody who died. And I was like having a conversation with a comedian, like say Patrice O'Neill's still alive and I'm talking to him and he makes a joke about that. That's expected. Like, if I'm hanging out with a group of buddies of mine, like I drink with or something, it's the same thing. I expect them to sort of razz me for shit like that. Because I think that's just sort of how guys, like, deal with shit. I don't know, at least myself, that's typically how it gets dealt with. So, I don't know, I think there's something to be said about that. Like, it is sort of like, it's in the ecosystem of humor. So, you know, and I have a dark sense of humor, so I like fucked up jokes. So
our good friend Tyler Yonke from the Libertarian Podcast Review gave a $10 super chat. He said, good to see Layton on the big show. The big show, we're called now. I don't know if you guys noticed, but we've been doing like between 40 and 80,000 views a show on Rumble now, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of the Rumble platform. So
a lot of my day tomorrow is going to be dedicated to emailing sponsors.
Yeah, we're looking for sponsors. If you have a business that you want to get the name out of, out for, let us know. We are doing some big numbers on Rumble, and I think we're going to start using Rumble Studio as well. So it's going to give us even bigger numbers on Rumble. So I've been talking to our rep over there, and he's, you know,
he's awesome.
They've been featuring us almost every show.
Yeah.
If you guys are looking to promote your business, let us know. We're definitely looking for some good sponsors, and you'll get some good, you'll get in front of some good crowds, some good audiences. Yeah,
you'll get in front of a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Israel, I know. Listen, I know. No, you guys don't want me to talk about Israel.
Israel. Really about time you get some bitches.
Yeah, I gotta get some new material, but you know, when they keep giving you material this way, I can't not take stabs at it. And so mm-hmm. like look, you know, we've covered this conflict ad nauseum on the show. And you know, one of the biggest arguments is constantly, look, Israel is just defending itself. It's just defending itself. And if you've seen the title of the show tonight, is Israel self-defends itself from terrorist food delivery drivers. I know there's some tongue in cheek in that, but it's the truth. This is what actually happened. Now, the World Kitchen. It's an organization that goes around and feeds people in war-torn and natural disaster territories. They work a lot with the United Nations. Now, look, I'm not a blue hat supporter. I think anybody who follows me knows that should shit pop off in the United States, I'm going to be gladly collecting blue helmets. Okay. I'm not a fan of the UN. I'm not a fan of NATO. I'm not a fan of any of these organizations that are supposedly defensive organizations that just continue to push their fingers in the chest of countries that don't want to be a part of their, you know, scheme, especially central banking. I think we saw that with like Gaddafi and others where they, that, oh, I don't want to be a part of your central banking bullshit. We're not going to be westernized. And within, you know, a couple of years, they were dead and labeled like, you know, evil dictators that were killing or gassing their own people. They tried to do much the same to Assad. I'm sure I've talked with a lot of my friends in Iraq and Iraqi friends that live here in the United States. And they said, you know, a lot of the talk that you heard about Saddam Hussein was the same. Of course, I'm not a Saddam Hussein supporter. I think he was an evil dictator. Probably needed to go. I don't know if America should have been the country to go and take them out. But, and you know, they've been pushing the same thing with Iran for a long time. They did it in the 50s with Mohammad Mossadegh, where he was the first democratically elected prime minister. He said, okay, well, we're going to nationalize our oil reserves. We're no longer going to give them to you for pennies on the dollar. You're going to have to actually pay for this stuff. And immediately, the Britain's MI6 and the CIA came together and pulled a coup on the first democratically elected prime minister of Iran and put the Shah back in power. Okay. So this is not new, right? I mean, this is how it works, but, so I'm not a fan of these people, right? Like I'm not a fan of the UN, but this is a country, you know, Gaza and Palestine, in general, the whole, even the West Bank to some extent, has been oppressed. I don't care what anybody says. Okay. If you're telling me that they haven't been oppressed, they haven't been run from their homes, they haven't had their land stolen, they haven't been thrown in jail and held without trial, if you're telling me these things haven't happened, you're either lying to yourself or you're wholly ignorant of the entire situation going on in that area, okay? And I don't care if you're mad at me about that. I don't give a shit.
I'm mostly ignorant of what's going on there because it's halfway around the world. The only reason I care a whole lot, like, at all is because we keep throwing money at it.
Sure. And that's one of my biggest problems. But also, here's my other problem is not only are we throwing money at it, we have people in our country right now that hold dual citizenship serving in our government. A large portion of the government that we have today is financed by the American Israel PAC, right? Like AIPAC, mm-hmm. which is should be designated a foreign agent and kicked out of this country entirely. Okay, the vast majority of the conflicts we've been involved in the Middle East have been because of Israel. Okay, and it's wasting tax dollars that could go to feed my children. It's killing hundreds of thousands of innocent humans, babies around the world. And this is no different. This is no different. If you're trying to tell me it's different because you have this, oh, our greatest ally talk with yourself all the time, bullshit. Bullshit. What does Israel do for America?
Yeah, that's the weird thing.
What do they do for America? Yeah. What does our biggest allies do for America? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They dictate your entire political sphere. That's what they do. They have control. They have the balls of your politicians in their shekel purse, dude. Okay? That's what they do. That's it. That's all they do. They are not your friends. They are not your allies. They are absolutely 100% using your military to kill people. They're sending your children to die in wars in the Middle East that have nothing at all to do with us, only have to do with Israel. And all because they want to protect the land that they came back and was given by another country that didn't have any reason to give them land there in the first place. They displaced thousands and thousands of, this is going to blow your mind, Christian Palestinians, the third oldest church in the entire history of the world. Guess where it's at? Gaza. Okay. Guess how many Christian Palestinians live today, right now, unmolested in Gaza? Thousands. You know, you're always hearing that, oh, well, the Muslims hate the Christians. Oh, well, they live side by side all over the Middle East with them, you know, and there's extremists everywhere. We got Westboro Baptist people, okay? They would totally be like the Islamists if they could, guaranteed. But there's extremist sects everywhere. But you know what? Christians are spit on when they try to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ in Israel. Guess where they're not spit on at? Gaza, okay? So, I don't give a shit if you're mad at me for that. And I'm not saying at all that Hamas is good, that Israel shouldn't be allowed to defend their people, whatever, okay? But what you can't do, okay, what you shouldn't be doing, which is going to make the whole fucking world hate you, is bomb a group of people that went there to feed children, you pieces of fucking human garbage. Garbage. Fucking garbage. It was very clearly they were in a moving fucking car with United Nations and five people from the World Food Bank that were there to feed displaced human beings. And you targeted and bombed and killed them all. I've seen the passports, dude. This isn't bullshit. This is widely world news, dude. Reported, okay? So are you telling me that our greatest ally to Christians, because I'm a Christian, dude, okay? What my allyship, okay, is always going to have a faith-based ring to it. Always, okay? I'm not going to ally with people that are doing things that are in direct conflict to my faith as a Christian, okay? So you're telling me that my biggest ally are people who will target and bomb a group of people trying to feed other human beings that are displaced due to war. Fuck you. Fuck you. Don't tell me they're my allies. They're not my allies. Absolutely garbage rhetoric that I don't want to hear from anybody. They're not my allies at all. They control my fucking government. They send my brothers and sisters to die in wars. They target fucking innocent people all the time. All the time. And I have been doing it for years, despite whatever bullshit cognitive dissonance you've sold yourself to make yourself believe that they don't. I'm sick of it. I'm not going to stand for it anymore. Israel is allowed to fight the people who have harmed them. Yes. But they've killed tens of thousands of innocent people. Innocent people. That's not defense. That's not self-defense. That's aggression. That's offensive. And I'm not going to stand for it anymore. At all. What do you think, Clayton?
I think it's interesting looking at everything that's happened with Israel and the sort of double standards and stuff that exists there. You've got a lot of people on the left who were in defense of Ukraine, who are now basically defending Israel, basically flopping back and forth. The right has sort of a similar position. I thought it was interesting seeing sort of one of the things you mentioned there was this idea of, well, We can't be allies with Israel because of the positions they take within our country politically, but also the positions they're taking militarily overseas, obviously, as far as in what I would consider to be sort of an open air prison they have set up in Gaza. But then I kind of zoom out and I go, yeah, but I mean, places like the United Kingdom, I mean, they were into legit colonization. They went around and did some pretty horrible things to people who were pretty defenseless. The Irish talk about that an awful lot. So I look at that and I go, well, we're allies with so many other countries that are like this. And I think a lot of it comes from the nature of what we are as a country now, because you talk about Christian values and those things. I'm not like a practicing Christian or practicing Jew or practicing anything really. I'm far more pagan occultist than anything else, but I certainly am a fan of religions and I like them. And so that's something you come to kind of grasp after a while, is we sort of existed as a Christian state, certainly as a country to begin with, and that certainly doesn't exist anymore on grand scale, at least not in the way that the government operates. And so I think that's something to point out as sort of the cause of some of this. Once you lose that faith reasoning within your government or faith-based reasoning within your politicians, it's going to become very hard to make those decisions anymore.
Isn't that crazy though, that in a country that is, the stats are 70% of this country will claim to be some type of Christian, some denomination of Christian, 70%. And yet we fall. Yes. Look it up right now if you'd like to. I promise you that's true.
Well, here's a question for you. What percentage of Jewish people who claim to be Jewish, who even practice Judaism?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense too. Right? Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense too, right? There's a lot of secular Jews, who are Jewish for the community and not Jewish for the religion. But here's the thing. So like,
estimates from 2021 suggest U.S. is about 63% Christian.
It's the last time I looked, it was 70. That's a suggestion. They say that from polls, 70, around 70%. So
yeah, Muslims, it was 63%.
Yeah. Okay. That's a lot. It's much lower than it used to be.
Yeah.
But it's still wild to me to see a country.
In the early 1990s, it was about 90%.
Yeah. So it's so weird for me to see a country that has like was built on these principles. Okay. And I don't care what anybody says. Anybody's like, oh, U.S. is not a Christian nation. I'm like, shut the fuck up, dude. It was definitely 100% founded on
Protestants. And
yeah, I mean, it was 100% without question.
My grandmother has a degree in religious studies and historical religious stuff relating to that. Like so that's sort of what I grew up around. I grew up around somebody who was very into like history and religions, like ancient history and how they relate to religious beliefs and how all these things got here to begin with, and that stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, everything you're saying there is completely evident within the history. The country was founded by people who were all mostly members of secret societies and private brotherhoods that were all based in Christianity as well.
Yeah, not debatable that this country is founded on Christian principles. I don't care. We've got to a place in society where we have enough people who aren't Christian that can go, it was not founded on Christian principles. Yes, it was. It was 100% founded on Christian principles.
In 1990, 90% of the country considered themselves to be Christian.
Of St. Thomas Aquinas and John Locke that Jefferson used for the tenets of the Constitution are Christian.
Right.
I mean, it in existence, that they came because of Christianity in a way.
One of the founding fathers was a Christian, yeah. I believe. There might have been one that wasn't.
Well, either they were a Christian or they were a member of a society that was brought up by Christianity or Christian. That's the point I always make with the Masons and such, because these groups at the time were mostly inherently Christian in some way.
Well, and it just comes back to this whole, like, this is our biggest ally. Like, no, it's not. It's not my biggest ally. I don't know why I'm told who my biggest ally is. I don't have a country that's my ally. You know what my country is? The guy next door that I borrow fucking socket sets from, dude, or who comes by and needs like a wrench from me. That's my biggest ally. The guy that helps me make sure that my car continues to run for my children, right? Like, what the fuck has Israel done for me or for my family or my community or my fucking country or my state? They haven't. What kind of ally do we have that does nothing, that gives nothing in return whatsoever, okay? Except for maybe make some pretty sweet guns, okay? The Israelis have some pretty dope guns. I'm not gonna say they don't, but
I'm gonna be honest. I hate bullpup rifles.
I think they're cool, man. I think theirs are really cool, dude. They have the best. They have the, as far as bullpup rifles go, they make the best ones. But so like,
I think
so, like,
they have that X16 or whatever.
Yeah, they have all kinds of really cool fucking guns. But like, so here's the thing. Like you know, I constantly get this shoved down my throat that like, you know, oh, Israel is the Holy Land. Israel is your ally. Israel is your biggest ally. You have to protect them because Israel is the Holy Land. It's like, I've already debunked that with the Bible. Okay, it says very clearly that Israel is not a physical land. It's a citizenship of the heart for all the sons of Abraham. Okay, the sons of Abraham are everybody who get this, accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, which Jews do not.
That's like the whole point of Jesus.
It's the whole point of the Second Covenant, right? Like,
yeah.
So Jesus fulfilled Mosaic law. Okay, and people are like, you can't fulfill the law. Like, yes, he fulfilled the Mosaic law. What he did is he died so that we didn't have to live under the Mosaic law. That's the whole dying for your sins shit.
Yeah.
Is so that like you don't have to like die in a flood because the whole world just decided to stop following Mosaic law. No, Jesus gives grace. So it was like the Mosaic law was replaced with grace in the Second Covenant. Okay, that was the whole point of the Second Covenant. That was the whole point of Jesus Christ dying for our sins. So don't tell me that I have to protect Israel because it says in my Bible, like we were supposed to be spread throughout the world and speak the word of Jesus Christ around the world, not in one physical land, not in one physical property. And maybe we're supposed to return when Jesus returns, but that's not happening right now. Okay. Maybe it's on its way. I don't know. Shit's getting pretty bad. Right. But like, so like I've already debunked this whole like physical land bullshit about Israel with my Bible. Okay, it's not a physical land. It's a citizenship of the heart for all the sons of Abraham. It says this in your Bible. If you're a Christian, all you have to do is pick up your Bible and read it. It will tell you these things. You don't have to go around and act like you know better than people who read their Bible every day. You probably haven't read your Bible in 10 years. Okay, I get that. I read the Bible every day. Every day. Every day. Okay, so I've already debunked that. Now, you want to bring up the biggest ally thing? What have you done for me lately? What have you done for me lately? Nothing. You've taken money out of my children's mouths to fight wars in the Middle East. Fuck your allyship. I don't want it anymore. I don't want it.
America does this weird thing that I don't think any other empire has really done, where we have these satellite states, but we don't call them satellite states, and we don't like tax them or treat them like they're satellite states. We just kind of invest in them and don't get any returns, at least not any clearly apparent returns. And we do this with a number of different places, and it's really weird, and it's one of the things that's driven the downfall of the U.S.
That's sort of that economic Fugazi. I've talked about this a lot, especially lately with all the conflict stuff going on as far as Ukraine goes, as far as Israel goes. Basically, my position on that is the U.S. has all the resources and money and markets that it needs to be a successful, wealthy country that doesn't need really any outside help except for purchasing other products and import-export stuff. And I think that's evident in all the markets that the government from a federal level has just removed from the market. Again, I talk about oil, right? Like, oil's a big resource that we are always like, if you go back to the 2000s, right, everybody remembers the 2010 2012 era. I'm sure everybody in this call does, right? Everybody was talking about how we were in the Middle East bombing in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, all these areas because of oil, because we were going after oil. The whole time we're doing that, you have places like Texas and Alaska and California and all these other areas that had oil historically, where oil was being collected, and then all of a sudden they just decided, we don't need to do that because of the environment now. All of that stuff is still there. None of it. You can go look at all the reports from all the companies like BP and Exxon and all these companies that were like, nah, we're still collecting oil here. You're just telling us we can't. And we could go find new spots, but you're telling us we can't tap those new spots. When you look at that across the board in the United States, not just with oil, but with every single market that exists here in the U.S., that has happened.
Hold on. One second before you guys go on any further. Mark Pellegrino, who I'm a big fan of, by the way, and has been on the show. I like Mark, and we don't see eye to eye on the Israeli thing at all. At all. This open-ended, no questioning support for Israel is terrible. It's a garbage, total garbage ideology that I never take part in anyways. Even if I did support Israel, I'd still not fit. I would never fail to criticize them for doing something wrong. Okay. But I said, what has Israel done for me? Okay. And he brought up some points here. I don't know about the medical, medical inventions that he brought up or, information tech. I don't think that that's true.
I can talk on that.
Well, I want to talk about something specifically that I know about. And he talked about water desalination, tech, which, I believe was created by Alexander Sarchin. I think that's his name. I always forget his last name. Who, by the way, was Ukrainian, was part of the Red Army, was an absolute devout communist from that took part in the Red Army before immigrating to Palestine in the 40s. Okay, so no, Israel did not create water desalination. A Ukrainian-born communist created this. And he just happened to have immigrated to Israel about 15 years prior to creating this technology. Okay, so no, I'm not going to buy that. I'm sorry, that's not true. Well, just not true.
There's been a lot of progress with that because it isn't desalination is like really energy inefficient, and I think it's in the last 10 years
for the time it was good. Yeah. I mean, in the 40s and 50s, early 60s it was created. I'm pretty sure that Alexander Sarchin, I think the same Sarchin, I always mess up his last name, had the patent for this. Okay, I think he was the creator of this. He was a Ukrainian born Red Army communist who immigrated to Palestine in the late 40s, maybe early 50s.
But
I'm not taking his invention for Israel. Sorry.
Is what he's saying, is he saying that they invented the technology or that they iterated on it to make it better and more efficient?
Sarchin absolutely was had the patent for that.
Yeah.
And it's something that I know quite a bit about. I mean, I could really talk about that all day, to be honest with you.
I always point out that it's like, well, what is the proof in the pudding as far as whether or not that person wouldn't have invented that thing if they were in Israel or not? Like, that argument doesn't really pin much weight for me, because it's like, well, you could live in Haiti and have invented that salination thing just as likely if you were on some, missionary thing.
Getting barbecued.
Yes. Yeah. Well, exactly. But it's just, the point to me is mute anyway, because it's like, well, no, that's, I'm talking about, like, when I say, what is Israel doing for me? What I think that means is like, no. So culturally, and for as far as the government there and the people we're handing off money to, which is the Bibi Netanyahu administration, what is the Bibi Netanyahu administration doing for the United States people? For the people who are paying the taxes towards the stuff that's being sent there.
$0.
The answer is fucking nothing.
I'd really like, here's what I'd like to know. Here's what I'd like to know. Without referencing the evil Islamists that are terrorists, okay? Because I've already debunked all this shit on my show repeatedly, where prior to 1954, when we started really meddling in Iran, there were no huge, like, terrorist attacks on the West. The Middle East didn't give a fuck about us.
Well, no one
Their neighbors.
Right.
That's what they wanted. They weren't like, oh, America's the great Satan. Well, no, they were like, this.
I'll debate anybody on this. I mean, prior to the CIA and the MI6 running a coup on their first primary democratically elected prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh, in like 1954 or whatever, There were no widespread, like, Middle Eastern terrorist attacks, Islamist terrorist attacks on the West. It just wasn't as a prevalent thing. It wasn't until we didn't happen until we started meddling in the fucking Middle East all the fucking time, constantly. Okay. So when people bring up, like, oh, well, if we didn't fight them over there, they'd fight us over here. It's like, yeah, probably because we keep fucking bombing their children, you dumb shit. Like, of course they're going to be mad at us, dude. Of course they want death to the West, dude, because the West continues to kill their families. Now tell me, and I always go back to the what if speech by Ron Paul, okay? One of the greatest fucking human speeches ever given in the history of the world, ever. If you haven't heard the what if speech by Ron Paul, listen to it. Get off the show right now and go listen to it and then come back, okay? I mean it. That's how important the speech is. It's one of the most important speeches where it says, what if the CCP sat up in the middle of Texas and started telling you what you could do, where you could go, if you could use the bathroom, they controlled your food, your resources, everything. What do you think Texans would do? What do you think fucking Texans would do if the CCP landed in the middle of Texas and started trying to dictate their lives and killing their children and killing their family members, bro? The CCP in America would cease to exist. Within a week, it would be over, dude. There'd be 90-year-old dudes rolling out with old school Ford Chevys and Gatling guns, bro. Okay? Like, it would be ugly and it would be quick and it would be swift and it would end immediately. So of course, if you think about this what if speech by Ron Paul, it's one of the greatest speeches in the history of humans ever. Okay? If you think about it in context, okay, the Middle East. Why does the Middle East hate America? Why? Why? Is it just because of a religion? No, you dumb shit. It's not because of a religion. It's not because of freedom. It's not because of any of those things. It's because we've oppressed their fucking people. It's because we've bombed their children and grandchildren over and over and over for decades and decades. We started Iraq War I in 1989, and we just bombed Iraq last week. Last week. It's been 40 years. 40 years we're bombing Iraq, dude. Okay? We've created one of the largest humanitarian crises in the history of the world in Yemen by helping Saudi Arabia. Okay? We've killed hundreds of thousands of children in Iraq. Okay? We killed people in Syria. We killed people in Afghanistan. Over and over and over. Libya, Somalia. Why do you think they hate us? Have they ever fought a war on any of our shores? No, absolutely not. Has there been some terrorist attacks since the 40s, 50s? Yeah, there has. There has. Who committed the terrorist attack on America in the 40s? Who? Who was it? Was it the Middle East or was it Japan? It was Japan. Why was it Japan? Was it because we were posturing for a war with Japan too? Okay. Now, I'm not going to hand wave the shit they did. It was disgusting. Pearl Harbor was terrible. It was one of the greatest tragedies in American history. 9/11 was one of the greatest tragedies in American history. Okay. But how long have we been attacking the Middle East and killing people in the Middle East prior to 2001? How long? How long? 50 years. 50 fucking years. We've gone through almost two generations of people that had to deal with our meddling and foreign interventionism in the Middle East. Okay. So don't sit here and tell me that, like, oh, well, the Muslims and the Arabs hate us and we have to fight them over there for our freedoms. Oh, you know, the Jews in Israel are perfect and they've never done anything wrong and they're our biggest allies. And there's no reason for anybody to hate them. There's no reason for anybody to hate America. Like, what level of cognitive dissonance does it take to watch our foreign interventionism over the last 100 years and not understand why? Why? So give me, you know, oh, okay, a couple of Israelis patented and created a few things that may have benefited Americans here and there. By the way, water desalination is still so costly that it can't be widely used at all. It's so fucking costly that it can't be widely used. I know about this stuff, okay? Every country, except for third world countries, have made medical advancements. The entire West. Okay? So, like, what are they doing for my family right? Like, what are the government, like Layton said, what are they doing for my family? Nothing. Zero. They're not my ally. What?
Well, under his measurement of giving us support, I mean, the Nazi Germans created a lot of medical ingenuity and furtherment. I wouldn't call them allies to the United States because they created a bunch of shit that we then used and borrowed. By the way, we also then took a bunch of their scientists, brought them over here and gave them jobs. So kind of an interesting point, I think, to add to that. Like, it's like, hey, wait, if making something makes you an ally or makes you a benefit, that's a kind of a weird stance to take when you look back in history.
Yeah, like, you know, Israelis aren't helping us get to the moon. They're not. we had a bunch of Nazi scientists help us out.
So the argument there is like, so Mussolini goes, hey, I invented this new hairpin, and all of a sudden, or I created this new catheter system, and all of a sudden we're supposed to be like, well, I guess Mussolini's our ally now, guys. Yep. We're supposed to be friends and like that guy. That argument is just so.
Che Guevara created a new belt buckle. We better be thankful.
Yeah. 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 He's bringing up the Barbary States and the Muslim conquest and all this stuff. I mean, the Muslim conquest was in like 10 or something like that.
Well, this is the stuff I'll talk about on the occult side. This is what no one's talking about here, and I think is very interesting. There's this stuff here that is removed from the discussion, which is the history and the occultism that does exist with this whole thing, which is this whole idea that a certain group of Christians have and a certain group of mostly Zionists, but some of them are also Orthodox, deeply Orthodox, just Jewish groups around this whole, like, you know, the red heifer shit and this whole second coming crap and all that. But there's another gauge of it, which is that there's been a whole war being fought in the Middle East for the last, really since the 1930s, 1940s, revolving not around conflict in a battlefield or a bomb being dropped in your head, but rather through the collegiate system, through the historical societies, through archaeology, and the fact that we know very little about the Middle East in these areas. This is something I'm constantly reading about and interested in. And there isn't a lot of new information coming out of those areas in the way of questions we've had for a very long time, as far as the origins of groups that come out of areas like Egypt and Israel in those areas, which there aren't clear answers on once you go certain distances back, because that history is non-existent. There's things that come into question, like the Hall of Records out of Egypt, and whether or not that ever existed, whether it was actually collected by archaeologists in the 1970s, which is something that a lot of people believe, myself included. And I think that a lot of that stuff would show a certain history that a lot of people don't want to accept, which is that, for starters, this idea of Jesus as an actual person and a historical character, I think
that's irrefutable at this point.
Yeah, but I think there's people who on the religious side will say that, but when you enter into collegiate spaces, into historical spaces, that is not the case. They do not buy that. They believe it is a created thing from books and constructs and passed down stories, and they have these explanations that just don't mesh with me. And I think one of the things that could prove that is something like the Hall of Records, because my argument has always been that the time period in which Jesus sort of disappears and you start hearing about him, stop hearing about him contextually, is a time of education in which he was most likely spending that time learning at the Hall of Records, which at the time would have been one of the biggest collections of knowledge at the time that would have been housed in Egypt. But none of that knowledge exists historically, because everywhere that knowledge would exist has been basically turned into this archaeological black hole, where Egypt and Israel work hand in hand in basically deciding what is the accepted history all throughout the Middle East. And this includes within the Muslim world, where everybody is sort of taught this version of what Muslims are, where they came from, how old their faith is, completely ass backwards from a completely new religion world point of view instead of the point of view that was carried by Muslims, say, in the 1940s and 1950s. So it's all sort of ass backwards. But it gets into a lot of weird things that obviously people have to kind of want to read and kind of dig into. But it is very interesting stuff, the occult stuff that is going on within the Israeli government as well, within the within Christian groups that are over there too. I mean, there's groups over, everybody who is involved in Israel at this point has some sort of either occult or religious purview over this conflict. And that's something I think people miss. It's like, everybody goes, oh, this isn't a religious conflict. It's like, no, it very much is. Like, if you talk to any of the people who are over there, it's definitely a religious conflict.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I think it's cultural and religious, but mostly religious.
Yeah.
He said Barbary pirates invaded European villages, kidnapped whole male populations. Them. Did the Spanish did that too? I mean, Europeans did that. Didn't the Spanish do that like the 1600s?
Well, the Russians did that to the native Alaskans.
Yeah, well, the Spanish did that to Angola in the 1600s, like 1617.
Pretty
or something
much
like that
everyone in history was a horrible person, and conditions were horrible for everyone.
Yeah. Well, it's not happening in the. It's never happened in the United States. I mean, no one's ever come to the United States. That's what I. That's we're not allowed to talk about Israel prior to October 7th. But then everybody wants to bring up the 1600s and 1500s and 1400s when we're talking about like modern Western culture and politics, which I think is hilarious. But even still, like. In the United States, which is where I live, which is where my loyalties are, which are where my allies live here in the United States, my community, right? Like no one's ever hopped on a boat and came over here and stolen whole communities for the people to put into slavery. That's never happened in the United States ever. Now we imported slaves here, of course, in the founding of the country, but that's
it
never
might have
happened
with the Vikings. In like
I'm talking about modern United States of America. Just shut up for a minute and stop trying to be autistic.
Stop trying to be smart.
Stop
okay.
trying to be autistic and listen to what I'm saying.
I can't help it.
Modern United States, okay? It's never happened here, okay? The Muslims never came over here in mass and took us and made us slaves, okay? And it's never going to happen because we're the military superpower. That's why everybody wants us to have their backs. We're one of the richest, most wealthiest, most militarily spectacular countries in the entire world in history, not just in the world, in the history of the world. Okay.
Oh, we're the most powerful military in the history of the world.
Close.
And it's not close.
Okay.
If you broke up our branches in the military,
they're still stronger than
I
every
think
other
they would each individually be the strongest military in the history of the world.
Yes, I agree. So it's happened. It's been happening in history forever. I get that. But what I'm saying is we don't have to go and fight these wars in the Middle East and use our tax dollars and take from our economy to continue to fight all these wars in the Middle East to keep us safe. It's never been about keeping us safe. It's always been about, geopolitics, right? Westernization of the Middle East, resources. Like this is what this is about. It's not about keeping Americans safe. If you wanted to, Americans are much safer with our military at home. At home, we let 6 million people cross the border in Texas last year. Okay. You want to talk about not being safe? You want to talk about not being safe? You think having our military all the way across the country spread out over 100 and something military bases keeps us safe here? No. What would keep us safe here is not letting every single person that wanted to flood across the Texas border not flood across the Texas border. Dude, that's what would make us safe. But instead, we're playing kingmaker around the Middle East and toppling and destabilizing entire nations and regimes and putting our own puppets in. And then we have to go to war against those guys. And then we create extremist groups like ISIS, like the Taliban. We want to bring up the Taliban. We train them here. The CIA literally trained them here in the United States. And then we spent 21 years fighting them. For 21 years, we fought them just for them to roll back in. And
Osama bin Laden.
Yeah. Just for them to roll back in and take back over the whole country in 5 minutes when we left. 5 fucking minutes. After 21 years of being lied into, the longest military conflict in United States history. Okay. Thousands of American sons and daughters dead. For what? Nothing.
Lord Miles is... cool story about chilling with the Taliban. That's the only silver lining I got.
Doesn't make any sense, dude. Doesn't make any sense to me. Like, we fought a 21-year-long war, billions and trillions of dollars, thousands of lost lives, okay? For what? To leave and watch the Taliban take back over Afghanistan in 5 minutes. And on top of it, get a bunch of new military, American military gear.
We spend 21 years just more heavily arming the Taliban.
And American citizens are so fucking stupid that they can't just Google, sit down at the computer, Google the Afghanistan papers and look directly at them, tell you that they lied you into this war, that they gave you rosy pronouncements and got you there in a war they knew they could never win, ever, ever. Just like Vietnam. They knew they couldn't win that war. They knew they couldn't beat the rice farmers, dude. They knew it.
And the wild, like, the wild thing about Vietnam is, even though we didn't win it, Vietnam's still a pretty pro-capitalist country. Like, they became super...
No, Mark. Super capitalist. It's not because we failed to name and annihilate the enemy. It's because the American government knew 100%. All you have to do is Google the Afghanistan papers. This is released... We were in that war for so long, that they've had to release the documents to the public that specifically say the American government knew 100%. Even military leaders knew 100%. That we could not win a war in Afghanistan. They knew it. We were not set up for the terrain. There was nothing we could do. There was no way we could win a war there, even against just the Taliban. Like, majority were goat herders, bro. Okay? And they knew that we couldn't win the war. They know that. They knew that at the time. They will tell you in the Afghanistan papers directly, they lied. It even says the words, rosy pronouncements. They made rosy pronouncements knowing they could not win this war and used all of these damn resources are the lives of our sons and daughters, okay, for a war that they knew we weren't going to win for 21 years, man. 21 fucking years. If you can look at that and say, yeah, America's foreign policy is awesome, you got something wrong with you, man. I'm sorry. You got something wrong with you. That's it. There is no other excuse. In the modern American history, longest foreign conflict ever, and they knew that we couldn't win, and yet they spent 21 years having our sons and daughters die there. I don't respect you if you think that was a good call. I don't respect you. Because you're either evil or retarded. I mean, that's your two options. You know what I mean?
Or both.
Or both. That's common too.
Like, spending 21 years smoking crack because you think you can build up a resistance to crack and be immune to it.
Calm down, Obama.
Yeah, calm down. Get out of here, Obama. All right, guys, we're getting to this thing, but we got to talk about Puff Daddy. I know we spent some time railing on the Middle East and foreign policy, and I do that every show, anyways.
Yeah,
it's got to happen.
I let you rant today. I did.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you not cutting me off.
Yeah, you let me get in my quips too. Yeah. So it was.
I don't
was
mind
nice
letting you have your quips. Just wait till I get to the end. You know what I mean?
I get so excited by the good ones.
I know
though.
You do. So Puff Daddy's
Joshua needs to get himself a red button like Crowder there.
Yeah. Shut up button.
We did talk about it.
We should get a shut up button.
I would the issue is I would just ignore it.
No, you just make it super obvious. You put it on camera in the middle of the room.
I could take down some stuff on this side and put up another neon sign that just lights up when I need you guys to shut up.
Shut the fuck up.
Just shut the fuck up, neon light on the other side of me. So is anybody surprised? Is anybody surprised that there's a grooming ring in American hip hop? Is anybody really that surprised? Are you surprised?
Not at all.
Is that surprising to you, Ryan?
Not the slightest.
Now that I like putting thought into it, not really, but hip hop doesn't seem to be like quite as organized as like Hollywood is. At least what I'm familiar with, you can come up.
Let me ask you a
really organically in hip hop, unlike in a lot of other entertainment mediums.
Let me ask you a question. So, you know how the music industry works, right? There's big, giant music record labels, okay?
Yes.
When hip-hop started, there were no independent artists, okay? There were no Tom McDonald's or people, like, making it big on YouTube rap, right? Like, that wasn't a thing. You were trying to get signed. Run DMC was trying to get the Adidas deal. They were trying to get signed by Geffen or whatever, right? I guess it wasn't Geffen, but I don't know who they were signed by. Panasonic or whatever. Sony or whatever one. BMG. Whatever they were signed by, okay? So like when the hip hop started and all through the gangster rap era too, okay, like all through the West Coast, East Coast beefs, like when Puff Daddy got big and famous and there was the war between Bad Boys East Coast and you know, Death Row Records on the West Coast. They were all on these big record labels, right? Suge Knight even had a boss, okay, for Death Row. He was the head CEO, but he had bosses. He had investors, right? Do you think that the music industry is any different when it comes to the executives, the people pushing the buttons and making the money, right, than Hollywood is? Do you think they're really any different at the end of the day?
I think
I could see there being a little bit of slight differences, but not like I feel like the music people might be a little more money focused and the Hollywood people might be a little bit more child feet focused.
I want to talk about something really serious here, okay, real quick. So there's a new documentary out on Prime. Basically almost entirely about Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like a 7-part, 8-part miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I know some people have heard little snippets of what was going on behind the scenes in that era of Nickelodeon. Okay. Especially with the creator of some of the biggest shows they've ever had, right? Like iCarly. Yeah. And now Dan Schneider,
mm-hmm.
who was the creator of these big shows. He got his start on a show called Head of the Class that I was a big fan of when I was a kid. He produced Drake and Josh.
Yep.
He produced iCarly, Victorious.
I think it was Zoe 101.
All that.
I'm not familiar
with
it.
It was like a sketch comedy show that actually put Nickelodeon really on the map when I was a kid.
Yeah,
that's
and
where
like the Amanda Bynes show.
That's where Keenan and Kel came from. The guys who do Good Burger. A lot of people came from that Amanda Bynes,
mm-hmm.
and then he was, of course, he started the Amanda Bynes show after that. Now there's a lot of, if you watch this documentary, I've heard snippets about Dan Schneider being kind of creepy and this and that.
He's in defeat.
Yeah, so there was a lot of shit that made it onto the show that if you watch it as an adult, you're like, holy shit, that was fucked up, right? But something that people aren't talking about is Dan Schneider didn't write the show. Okay. There was like literally a team of fucking writers that wrote most of these shows. Okay. Now Dan Schneider did a lot of really dumb shit. He was a totally tyrannical boss. Was very, very clearly, had views on gender roles. Actually paid a team of female writers a single salary for some time writing for all that, while paying all the men, full salaries in the office. He had a lot of stuff. Now, every single thing that I've watched in this documentary that has come out about him, there was no creepiness towards children. Like, personally, at all.
Mm.
He didn't molest children. He didn't have children around him, like, privately in his home.
He was creepy, but he didn't abuse
Now,
them,
listen. Now, listen.
Is my understanding.
So, Drake Bell, okay?
Yes.
And Josh and Drake got their start on another TV show. Okay, I think Victorious or one of the shows.
No, Drake and maybe Josh was over before Victorious started.
Then it was the Amanda Bynes show.
Yeah, okay. I think Amanda Bynes.
They were kind of like characters on the, and then they decided they wanted to do a buddy comedy out of that.
Yep.
Now, what a lot of people don't know is that on some of these sets, not just showrunners, but like people who were literally watching and walking the kids around sets, the dialogue coach, Brian Peck. And two other people have all been arrested at different times for CP, pedophilia, harm to children. Mm-hmm. Okay, 4 people on one network. Okay. But what a lot of people didn't understand is that when Brian Peck was arrested back in the 2000s, it was because he was abusing and molesting Drake Bell.
Yes.
Terribly. Not just, oh, like, creepy things.
So
Drake has never talked about this publicly ever, mm-hmm. until now. Okay, even through the court and everything, his name was all sealed because he was a minor. He didn't tell anybody. The one person he reached out to was Dan Schneider. And he said, Dan Schneider was absolutely 100% supportive of me, asked me if I needed anything, took me under his wing, made sure I was okay, was never creepy towards me, nothing. So the whole thing is just weird because it's all about how Dan Schneider's an asshole. But at the end, he's like the guy who was there for Drake Bell when Drake Bell went through all the
shit. Jerry Traynor apparently was very big at trying to keep these people away from like Miranda Cosgrove and Jeanette McCurdy. Sure. And
well, there was this handy guy that was literally caught with a 9-year-old in her room who was like actually the guy that was like walking all the kids around set, getting their emails, getting their phone numbers. But this Brian Peck guy was absolute prolific groomer. I mean, completely separated Drake Bell from his father, and became his manager at Nickelodeon, dude, and like completely separated, would have him stay at his house every night because his mom couldn't drive around LA for auditions. I mean, literally took him from his family and did all this stuff. You know how long he spent in prison? 16 months.
Yeah, because...
And then he went on to work on The Secret Life of Zack and Cody.
Do you know why he only spent 16 months in prison? Because...
Letters written by other Hollywood stars of support was a big...
By executives and high-ups at Nickelodeon and all throughout...
Perfect. Hold that thought, because this is where we're going. This is where we're going, okay? The same people who run Nickelodeon, same people who run TriStar Pictures and Columbia and all these big movie companies in Hollywood, okay? Universal Studios and all of them, okay? We know 100% that they are grade A pieces of shit, right? We know that. This isn't a conspiracy theory. This isn't a conspiracy theory. These are the worst of the worst of the worst. These are people that are on the Epstein flight logs repeatedly over and over and over again, okay? Do you think, truly and honestly, that the big record executives in music, the music industry, are any different than the Hollywood executives? And if so, why?
I don't know. I haven't... This is kind of my introduction to the concept that they might be. So I need time to like process it. And if they were different, the biggest argument I would make would potentially be a lot of the music industry is based out of like Detroit and New York, while Hollywood is out in Los Angeles. And
yes,
the cultures there
is a beacon of all that is good in America.
The cultures there might be a little bit different, so there's not that additional pedophilic aspect. That would be my argument. I don't have anything to support.
But wait, but now we're finding out that it is not. It is actually the same, right? With this P. Diddy stuff. And so the crazy thing to me is we watched Justin Bieber for years. Whether you liked him, hated him, whatever, I don't give a shit. Every show you saw him on, someone was being inappropriate to him, and he was a fucking 14 to 15 to 16-year-old kid, okay? Now we know that P. Diddy was probably a groomer for the music industry, okay? He's legitimately indicted. I mean, he's getting indicted. Like, this is a huge, crazy thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it got me back to thinking about gangster rap, because I used to listen to a lot of gangster rap when I was a kid. I'm from Oakland, California, man.
Yeah.
Okay. This was like the height of gangster rap pop culture in the spot where it was celebrated. Okay. It got me thinking back to people like Tupac Shakur, who was an actor, by the way. He was an actor. He was not a gangster at all. He was like a theater dork, dude, turned rapper, made by the music industry, okay? Got me thinking about people like Vanilla Ice, okay? Who was one of the biggest rappers of my childhood and was not a fucking gangster, okay? But was part of Death Row Records, okay? It got me thinking about...
Everyone knew Vanilla Ice wasn't a gangster.
Yeah, no, they didn't. They portrayed him as a Death Row Records guy, dude, okay?
Oh, I knew from the first time.
A lot
time
of the
I
guys at
him.
NWA, man, Dr. Dre was not really a gangster. Snoop Dogg was a gangster. Okay, Eazy-E was a gangster, but like I'm just using these examples. There was hundreds of them created by rich white record executives,
yeah,
to say, this is the new way. This is the way it's going to be done. We need you to go out there and we need you to talk about shooting people and gangbanging and drugs and fucking women. And this is what you need to do. And they infected our fucking youth in the inner cities all over the country with this message. Do you think that the people who went out on a limb and made money off doing that are good people?
No.
No, of course not. They're morally defunct.
I wasn't saying they were good people.
Right, but they're just as bad. What do you you got any thoughts on this, Layton?
I think the music industry and the Hollywood sort of movie industry is identical. There's not really much difference. In fact, as far as like behind closed doors, they work together in tandem. The music industry supports film. Film supports music. It sort of goes hand in hand. As far as the executives go, and the like CEOs, people at the top, they're all just a giant cesspool. They're all basically shared together. And I think it's actually sort of interesting when you see how this is all breaking out. It appears to me like P. Diddy and all these people are caught up in what I would describe as what were probably smaller, not really more trafficking as much as they were just these parties these guys were having where they're having underage people there. They're doing this whole shtick. But the problem is when you're doing that, you're bringing people in by flight. And now you're doing it for 10, 15, 20 years. These guys are going away. If they're going away, they're going away for a long time. This is stuff that's going to stretch back a long time. And I think much similar in the way that the Epstein stuff does. When you look at that, it's like this stuff goes back forever. It's like,
yeah, but the American judicial system will absolutely 100% throw the gangster rapping black dudes under the bus, as opposed to the Jewish operative, Israeli operative, IDF operative.
Tekashi 6ix9ine is out.
Huh?
Tekashi 6ix9ine is out in prison. Caught up for that.
You don't think Tekashi is black?
His stuff was drug related.
No, he was caught on video having sex with a 14-year-old.
I didn't know about that. I don't follow
the problem with that court. No, the problem with that court case was they were not able to prove in court whether or not things were actually done off camera or not. And so that part of that case was very flimsy, whereas they had him with actual gang members dealing in narcotics. And so it was like, yeah, you're just fucked. That was my understanding of that case anyway. I haven't looked
either way I look at it. I'm talking about this. If there's an elite pedophile ring in the music industry, okay, where they're grooming young child stars and other kids, like there was one at Epstein Island with Jeffrey Epstein, they will have no problem throwing the gangster rappers who were a part of it right under the bus. It's not like this high level political class and ruling elite where they're not going to throw those people under the bus that have been to Epstein Island. They're not even going to release their names. They will 100% throw the gangster rappers under the bus. There's no doubt about it. Guaranteed. They will all come out. And that's why P. Diddy's running. I mean, he's been all over the place. I don't know if you've been watching this, but
I know he got out of the country.
Yeah, he got out. Mm-hmm. So, well, we're at the end of this thing. Layton, man, I appreciate you. I love you to death, dude. Where can people find you, support you, listen to you, all those good things?
Well, you can go to outlawedthoughts.com. That'll take you to my YouTube page, which is just called Outlawed Thoughts. I do a show on there every week. And we're going to be sort of moving that forward and doing more of those. And then I've got my documentaries and stuff that I make. So
what documentaries are you working on right now, man?
Right now I'm working on sort of a part two sort of redone version of my Joe Vogler documentary. And I'm working on a thing about the Nick Begich, Hale Boggs, plane disappearance here in Alaska.
Oh yeah. You know, there's a lot of Russians that have disappeared in plane accidents in Russia in Alaska that just go unnoticed entirely. Did you know that?
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
It's very odd. There's a lot of this been going on, especially recently.
Well, we love you to death, Layton, man. Thanks so much for coming on, dude. I'm sure we'll have you back on, and if not, you're gonna make it to DC for this convention or what?
I think I will be in DC.
Man, I think I think it's going to be a fun time. I don't know if we'll get the nomination. We're going to work real hard to get it. We are one of the front runners right now to make it into the debate at the National Convention. So that's good. And we didn't talk about that on the show, but the Libertarian National Committee has changed the token system. It used to be you had to get some tokens at from the delegates at the National Convention. Now it's whoever can raise the most money for the LNC gets to be a part of this debate. So they're like actually like this whole money-making scheme because they've lost so much fucking money over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's just disgusting. And it's like, I want to be the guy that stands on principle and is like, it's like, no, fuck no, we're not taking part in this. But like, I have to be in that debate, dude. Like, it has to, I have to be a part of that debate. And it's on C-SPAN. If we get the nomination, it's going to give coverage to our merging campaign for the presidential race. And so, like, it has to be done. And I hate it. I hate, they know that it's basically, at this point, it's basically like coercion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Totally.
And they, I think it goes back to getting rid of Kara Schultz. I think that's where a lot of the
getting rid of Kara Schultz was one of the dumbest fucking things this party could have ever done.
I think that's kind of what caused a snowball effect where they had to scramble a ton to try.
It's more than that too. It was like
basically reset every establishment.
There was a lot of staff members that knew what the fuck they were doing that they ran out the door. Mm-hmm. But Kara Schultz is definitely the biggest. Fuck, dude. I mean, look, I understand that people on my side of the aisle don't get along with Kara Schultz and don't like her. And I understand that she doesn't like a lot of the people on my side of the aisle either. And when it comes to, like, you know, our messaging needs and wants and what I want to see as far as, like, bold campaigns. But, like, goddamn, she did a lot of really good, hard work, dude, that was so important to the party. And so, like, I've always respected her for that. Even when we didn't see eye to eye, we've had a lot of the same thoughts when it comes to actually running the party. So, like, yeah, man, it was one of the dumbest things that could have ever happened was letting Kara Schultz go, dude. It's just, I don't care who gets mad at me about that. That's true. She was fucking amazing. She helped our campaign succeed, bro. I mean, like, campaigns that had won. I mean, she helped succeed. She won her own campaign in Minnesota, dude. You know what I mean? Like, we need more people like that. What, you got any thoughts on this debacle with the debate at the National Convention, Layton? Before you go?
I'm definitely not a fan of requiring a set amount of money to be able to speak at the debate. It sort of goes against the whole, you know, libertarians have been kept off the debate stage by Democrats and Republicans because we don't meet certain vote totals, which they arbitrarily come up with for us to meet. And you go, well, that's exactly what you're doing here. You're just putting a dollar figure next to it. And it all goes back to the fact that, you know, the only reason they need these massive donations right now is because they fucking suck at what they're doing. So,
yeah, there's that. There's that. And look, I want to be clear, too. I have not made a lot of people are like, oh, you haven't raised a lot of money. And I'm like, I have not made fundraising like a huge priority in this campaign because I didn't want to take a shit ton of money from people. Like $100,000 or whatever,
yeah,
and then not get the nomination, right? Like I was like purposely kind of not like doing huge pushes for money. I would just like push for a little bit of money when we needed it to travel to convention stuff like that. So we never built like a big war chest. We run it off bare bones purposely, and so now we're at a time where we're 2 months out from the convention and we're gonna make a big push to raise, you know, $10,000-$15,000 so we can have like, breakout rooms and stuff like that at the convention for delegates and people who want to come and listen to us speak and get together, meet and greet, all these things. And, you know, so my family can travel to the convention and all these things that we need to do for the convention. And now they want us to make people that would support us spend money on the LNC instead of the campaign. It's like, that's really fucked up. Yeah. And almost kind of like, you knew that I wasn't raising a lot of money, kind of quasi purposely.
I think they're just desperate for money.
Yeah, I'm sure that's it.
I think because the poor decisions they made, and I'm trying to remember, it was like DL Liberty or something had Angela McCardle on, and they talked about it where they were merging their donor systems.
Oh, I know all about it. Their tokens, all their tokens failed. Like over half their tokens failed when they left Civi CRM, which and Razor's Edge. Those tokens were so old that like they all failed when they tried to put them in the new system.
Mm.
And so like they had to go manually around to every donor and try and get all those donors back.
Yeah.
All those monthly and yearly donors. Like they just lost them all. Mm-hmm. I know how that works, right? Like, it was part of the reason why I was kind of like against the migration to begin with,
mm-hmm.
was because I knew it was going to fuck a lot of things up, and it did. It absolutely did, 100%. And that was the biggest problem, was that we lost, like, I think they lost like 50% of their data. It was a huge fucking portion of data.
Yeah, they lost a good chunk of it.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to come out 2 years after it happens and be like, yeah, we ran into this and this and this. Especially when people knew, had the foresight to know that this might happen, you come out and say, hey, this is something we're doing that might, you know, this could be a potential consequence, and, you know, this and this and this might happen
Here's the other problem, Ryan, is that Andy Burns and Ken Mollman are the people that know these systems inside and out,
mm-hmm.
okay, and they ran Andy Burns out the door.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy Burns has been the system administrator for years on these programs. And mm-hmm. so he actually brought this up. He brought this concern up and then was let go. And then they migrated anyways without him.
And he's going to be the guy that's going to be the most help in migrating.
He was the one that could have saved all the tokens. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So anyways. All right. We got to go, dude. We got to go. Layton, I love you to death, man. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll see you in DC, brother.
See ya.
All right, guys. Another great episode of Break the Cycle. Layton's great. If you're not following Outlaw Thoughts, man, go follow Outlaw mm-hmm. Thoughts. Go check Layton out on Twitter. This guy's awesome, man.
His
little documentaries he put out is pretty good, dude.
Yeah. I call him the Alaska supremacist.
He is the Alaskan supremacist, and that's okay. That's all right. That's what he should be. Mm-hmm. We love you guys to death. We'll be back hopefully Tuesday with a new show. Yeah. I got a lot going on.
Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe.
Yeah, like, comment, subscribe.
Yeah, follow us on Rumble. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook,
yeah.
Kick.
Yeah.
Twitch, YouTube, all of that good stuff. Please share the episode with your friends.
Yeah. Do all the good things that we need you to mm-hmm. do to help the show continue to grow. We appreciate you guys. I love you to death. I'll see you Tuesday for an all new show with Break the Cycle. But until then, don't forget to break the cycle.
Due to legal reasons, I just have to explain. The lyrics of my last song may seem to contain a violent call to action in the verse and refrain. But I just meant it in Minecraft. The helicopter part was in reference to GTA 5 and the things you do. So any violence you commit, I am not an excuse, because I just meant it in Minecraft. But Chipper is my friend and he's constantly cold. Accusations of incitement getting totally old. Make your own choices, yeah, you have control, because I just meant it in Minecraft. Obviously, I would never advocate force, unless it's due process and a trial, of course. And if you're convicted, we will make you a corpse in Minecraft, just in Minecraft. You're nothing, I mean, you know it. No product, theaters, gets it closed from COVID.